Okay, as Ann mentioned, I am with the Health Resources and Services Administration, which is part of the Federal Department of Health and Human Services, based out of San Francisco. Region 9, which is our territory, Health and Human Services for the federal government has 10 regions, and Region 9 encompasses the states of California, Nevada, Arizona, Hawaii, and the Pacific jurisdictions. I have nothing to disclose. Nothing relevant to disclose. Okay. So the Health Resources and Services Administration, as the nation's access agency, HRSA works to improve access to healthcare services for millions of people who are uninsured, isolated, or medically vulnerable. We support healthcare providers in every state and U.S. territory. HRSA's mission is to provide national leadership, program resources, and services needed to improve access to culturally competent, quality healthcare, involving such things as improving access to healthcare, strengthening the health workforce, building healthy communities, and improving health equity. Our budget is $7.2 billion. We have 63 distinct program lines and over 30,000 grantees. Our administrator is Dr. Mary Wakefield. So we have a lot of different programs we offer. And a lot of these that are on this list here are some of our major ones, and I'll talk about them later. But just some ones that maybe are less familiar with people. HRSA operates the practitioner data banks, which keeps track of health professions. We also run the Stop Bullying Now campaign. We do the national poison control. We're a leader in telehealth for rural areas. We also do the healthcare for the homeless grantees, migrant health centers, and the Native Hawaiian health centers. The people we serve, HRSA, the HRSA primary healthcare clinics served last year 20.2 million patients in over 8,500 health center sites, including 1 in 3 people with income below the poverty level. The Ryan White HIV/AIDS program serves over 500,000 people. Two-thirds are members of minority groups. The maternal and child health care program serves 34 million women, infants, children, and adolescents. The 340B program. How many people are familiar with the 340B program? Okay. So there are over 16,000 safety net providers which can participate in this drug discount program for safety net providers. The program reduces the cost of drugs to these safety net providers from 20 to 50% of wholesale prices, and saving an annual amount of about $1.5 billion to $2 billion for these, safety net providers. And then nationally, antipsychotic and antidepressants account for over 18% of the total Medicaid prescription drug reimbursements for dual eligibles that can be affected by the 340B program for safety net providers. And then finally, the National Service Corps, that program has been increasing over the past couple of years, and last year we had over 10,000 individuals who were getting loan repayment and scholarships through the National Service Corps. Okay, so HRSA is broken down into 6 bureaus and 10 offices. Bureau of Clinician Recruitment Services, that is the bureau that is primarily responsible for the National Health Service Corps. The Bureau of Health Professions tries to increase access to healthcare by developing, distributing, and retaining a diverse, culturally competent healthcare workforce, and they do a lot of grant and loan repayment and scholarship programs. Bureau of Primary Healthcare is the agency. The big thing that they do is they oversee the community health clinics, the health centers across the country. Healthcare Systems Bureau, they protect the public health and promote practices that improve personal health. And they do a lot of the programs that people are maybe less familiar with, such as the organ, bone marrow, and cord blood donation program, 340B program, poison control centers, vaccine injury compensation, other things like that. The HIV/AIDS Bureau, the big thing that they do is the Ryan White HIV/AIDS program. And then the Maternal and Child Health Bureau, their primary responsibility is the block grants that they provide to the states, and then the home visiting program, and they have a lot of other smaller programs too. And then the offices, not quite at the level, so Bureau is sort of kind of the big level at HRSA, and then there's a lot of offices that work on special projects. Office of Regional Operations is the one that I work for. Office of Rural Health Policy deals with rural, trying to improve health in rural areas. And then Office of Special Health Affairs deals with special projects, including behavioral health integration is under their bailiwick. So HRSA grant awards for last year. I thought this is an interesting slide to put up because you can sort of see where the bulk of the money and then the number of grants go. So on the left is the dollar figure, the pie chart for the dollar figures. And as you can see, yellow, which is the primary healthcare, basically the healthcare clinics, receives the bulk of the money. Second largest recipient of funds is the HIV/AIDS program. And then the third would be clinician recruitment services, again, the National Health Service Corps, primarily with that. On the right, you can see quantity of grants, number of grants. And interestingly, on that side, health professions is the largest share of the pie because they do a lot more smaller grants to try to improve the healthcare workforce across the country. Catch up on my notes. Okay, so now what I thought I would do is I would kind of talk about how some of these programs that I just discussed work in the behavioral health area and integration. So the Ryan White AIDS program provides primary health care, support services, and life-sustaining medications for about half of the estimated 1.1 million people living with HIV/AIDS in the United States. And behavioral health conditions are comorbid in as many as 50% of HIV/AIDS patients across the country. That was a stat from the Institute of Medicine, so you can see that there's a big overlap there in the services that are provided. The Ryan White Care Program actually is broken down into parts A, B, C, D, F, special project. There's a lot of different parts of the grant program. The big four are A, B, C, and D. A is the emergency assistance to eligible metropolitan areas. B is the state block grant program, and that's a big chunk of funds. And then C and D are the ones kind of more specific programs receive grant funds in that area. And Part C and D programs are required to provide comprehensive health primary care, including behavioral health care services, to all the patients that come through their door. Mental health, and then in specifically Part C programs, mental health services are provided by 73% of our grantees, and Part D programs, 54% of those. Okay, the maternal and child health program. Again, they serve more than 34 million women, infants, and children. And interestingly, they reach 6 in 10 women who give birth in the United States. The program is under that. The Healthy Start program is under the maternal and child health program. And some of the behavioral health connections there is they fund behavioral health screening, and 73% of Healthy Start programs have formal smoking cessation programs. Also, the Maternal and Child Health Bureau puts out the Bright Futures Guidelines, which is a book which has been more than 1.3 million copies have been issued, and it includes important chapters on drug and alcohol use and screening of youth. So the home visiting program is something kind of new. It was created by the Affordable Care Act. And it funds states to provide evidence-based home visitation services to improve outcomes for children and families who reside in at-risk communities. The Affordable Care Act provided $1.5 billion over 3 or 5 years. I'm not quite sure about that number, but $1.5 billion in order to provide these services. Home visiting is a strategy that has been used by public health and human services programs to foster child development and address problems such as infant mortality. And it is meant to provide comprehensive services, including behavioral health services. Health professions training programs seek to improve access to healthcare by helping health professions address some of the most pressing needs across the U.S. health workforce, with a special emphasis on improving diversity across the workforce and making sure that there are enough healthcare providers in disadvantaged communities. Some of the things that are directly related to behavioral health is there recently, and this is again funded by the Affordable Care Act, it was the Mental and Behavioral Health Education and Training Program. And that was just issued, $9.8 million to 24 grantees, which are social work and psychology schools, for 3-year grants to try to increase the number of providers providing behavioral health care in the community. The Graduate Psychology Education Grant Program is, again, that provides funding to psychology education programs who can then provide resources to their students to try to make it easier for them to get their degrees. Area Health Education Centers is something that we've been funding for years now, and there is at least one in every state or area. And in 2010 and to 2011, they provided training to 26,190 mental health professionals through behavioral health continuing education programs. And then additionally, there are some education loan repayment programs, health professions training grants, and the nursing workforce development. The nursing loan program is one of our more competitive programs. There's always a lot more applications than money that there is available. And they tried something interesting last year where they dedicated 50% of the funds to go to nurse practitioners with the idea that they can there's been a focus in the last couple of years to try to emphasize the use of physician assistants and nurse practitioners out in community health centers to try to get a better bang for your buck in terms of providing services in the community. The National Health Service Corps, under the Bureau of Clinician Recruitment Services, it recruits fully trained professionals to provide culturally competent interdisciplinary primary health and behavioral health care services to underserved populations, and in return they get their student loans paid for. The Affordable Care Act allocated $1.5 billion over 5 years to grow the National Health Service Corps. And in 2011, last year, they reached more than 10,000 people, clinicians, who were then involved in the program. And that was a 300% increase over the 2008 numbers. And then just recently, they've done a shift in the program to try to emphasize again underserved or disadvantaged communities, and clinicians who work in those communities. They can get up to $60,000 a year of their loans repaid annually. And if you don't work in a disadvantaged community, you can get up to $40,000 of your loans repaid annually. One of the benefits is 80%. A lot of times the National Service Corps brings clinicians into areas that they would not have otherwise worked in because they get the loan repayment. And 80% stay in the underserved area after fulfilling their National Service Corps commitment requirement for at least 1 year. I believe the number drops down to about 55% over 10 years, but still, that's a sizable number of clinicians who would not have otherwise been working in those disadvantaged communities. Currently, 3,000 National Service Corps individuals provide behavioral health care services, including psychiatrists, clinical psychologists, clinical social workers, licensed professional counselors, marriage and family therapists, and psychiatric nurse specialists. And I mention those disciplines because that is something new that happened in the last year or two. Previously, the behavioral health professionals were not eligible to receive National Health Service Corps loan repayment, but now they are. And 20% of behavioral health applicants in the National Service Corps are engaged in substance use disorder service delivery. So again, HRSA has the Office of Rural Health Policy, which seeks to guide healthcare decision-making in rural health areas. They put out a lot of publications to try to support this. And there's a great website here, which I have on there. It's called RAC Online, Rural Access Center Online.org. It's done out of the University of South Dakota, I believe. And they are a tremendous wealth of information about rural healthcare issues, and they have a whole sections on behavioral healthcare also. It's a great website to check out, and one of our grantees. And then also there is the Rural Healthcare Services Outreach Grant Program, which supports innovative healthcare delivery systems in rural communities. Focused on a consortium approach, which ideally includes mental health services. And then the Rural Office of Rural Health Policy is also doing a lot in trying to incorporate veterans health care into community health care. There's collaboration programs between our health center clinics and the Veterans Administration, and there's some recent grant awards in order to try to promote that. And then they also try to do a lot in the telehealth network, through the telehealth network grant program and other telehealth areas to provide the telehealth education centers, which are meant to try to support community health centers and other providers in the community who want to do telehealth services. And as we all know, behavioral health care services, particularly mental health services, are a strong component of telehealth care. Okay, and then I am part of the Office of Rural Regional Operations. And as you can see, this is the way that the country is broken down into the 10 regions. And the ORO staff work collaboratively with local, state, and regional healthcare partners And in addition, we also work with the other HHS optives, which are in the regions, such as CMS and SAMHSA. In particular, in Region 9, we've been working very closely with the SAMHSA Regional Administrator. And just this year, we put on some behavioral health integration conferences in the states of Arizona and Nevada with the idea of trying that SAMHSA has their funded grantees, HRSA has their funded grantees, and they don't always collaborate together well. And so these conferences were meant to explore ways that they can try to do that. And of course, you know, and some of the ideas that came up in that too is that there are a lot of hurdles that need to be overcome before that can really fully be realized. So our community health center program is probably the one thing that we're most known for. It's biggest dollar grant amount of grantees that we provide. And again, it was over 8,500 clinics, which are located in or serve a high need community. And so when I say high need, it has to be a designated medically underserved area or medically underserved population, or HPSA, health professional shortage area. There's a lot of rules and restrictions which go along with being one of our community health centers. And some of those are that they have to be governed by a community board composed of a majority of health center patients. They're expected to provide comprehensive primary health care, including primary and preventive services and enabling services. All services they provide must be available to all, with fees adjusted based on ability to pay. And if someone is unable to pay, then the clinic is still expected to provide a full cohort of services to that person. And then they meet other performance and accountability requirements. And they are required to provide mental health services, or at a minimum, to have formal referral arrangements to do so. So I thought I would kind of explore that concept a little bit, because it kind of gets at this idea later on that I can talk about hurdles that need to be overcome. So the specific language around the required and additional services that health centers are expected to do is health center provides all required primary, preventive, enabling, and additional health services to meet the needs of the population it serves, either directly or through established written arrangements and referrals. And then this is the specific language. Services should include referrals to other providers and specialists, case management, enabling services, behavioral health services, recuperative care, and environmental health services as appropriate. And then specifically, healthcare for the homeless grantees are required to provide substance abuse services among their required services. The other clinics are encouraged to provide substance abuse services, but they can do it through referral arrangements, but then those can get kind of complicated sometimes. So the health center program. This is the calendar year 2010 is the last year that I have full data on the program. The number of patients is actually up to 20.2 million, which I mentioned earlier. 93% of patients are below 200% of the poverty level. 38% are uninsured, which means that about 38, over a third of the patients that come into a community health center, the clinics do not get reimbursed for providing them services. So HRSA, we do provide grants through the clinics in order to try to offset all that uncompensated care that they're providing. In general, the grants maybe only cover about half of the write-offs that they are expected to do by being one of our health centers. A lot of the patients that are seen are racial, ethnic minorities, homeless individuals, migrant seasonal farm workers, or residents of public housing. In 2010, there were 77 million patient visits at our clinics, and they employ over 131,000 staff, including 4,200 behavioral health care providers. In calendar year 2010, I believe that number has gone up. I don't have the data on that yet. Okay, so actually let me just quickly to look at, so 77 million patient visits, 20.2 million patients, access, and this is kind of behavioral health specifically in the health centers. So under a million patients receive behavioral health care services. So as you can see, even though the healthcare centers are required and encouraged to provide behavioral health care services, it doesn't always get done as much as we would probably like it to get done. Two-thirds do provide on-site mental health services to some of their patients. One-third provide on-site substance use services. Over 50% have a tobacco cessation program. There was a big push recently for the SBIRT, screening, brief intervention, referral to treatment, for our clinics to provide. That SBIRT sort of fits into the medical model, which our clinics tend to follow, so that kind of went along well. The workforce, behavioral health workforce in our clinics, again, there's over 4,240 behavioral health care providers, including 395 psychiatrists, 360 psychologists, 1,264 social workers, 845 substance abuse providers. Those last two numbers, I think, are pretty significant, maybe even the last three, in that a lot of those positions are not fully funded in the health centers. It's just the health centers decide that it's important to provide those services, so they bring that staff on, the substance abuse providers and the social workers, even though they oftentimes don't get reimbursed for the services that they provide. 3 minutes, okay. And then we also do a recent innovation that came out of the Affordable Care Act, a school-based health center capital grant program, where we provided, just recently, we're providing grants to over 1,000 health centers, school-based health center sites to increase their capacity. Okay. Our health centers, one of the things, a big initiative that we're doing right now is to try to encourage all of our health centers to become health patient-centered medical health homes. And so there's a $44 million grant which just came out to encourage all of them to do so, to get NCQA certification. I believe we're about 15% right now, but the expectation is that over 80 or 90% of our health centers will get that certification. One of the things that HRSA also does is the Center for Integrated Health Solutions, which is a partnership between SAMHSA and HRSA, to provide national technical assistance resource for behavioral health and primary care integration across the country. I'm running out of time, so I'm just going to go quickly. So this is the Center for Integrated Health Solutions website. It is on the SAMHSA website. I specifically did a screenshot, too, because I don't know if people are aware, but they recently put out billing and financial integration worksheets for every state, which they've gotten great feedback on, very positive. What they do is they basically, for every state in the country, they went through and they determine what behavioral health services are billable under Medicare and Medicaid according to state laws, state Medicaid laws, and according to national Medicare laws. A lot of the states didn't necessarily want all that information out there because some states don't want it known that, for instance, they do same-day billing and such. Okay, Center for Integrated, so my slides will be available online. Center for Integrated Solutions, they put out a lot of publications and they do a lot of webinars. And webinars are open to the public because they want to be a national resource for everyone who wants to do integration efforts. Affordable Care Act, Section 2703, person-centered health home, key part of the Affordable Care Act to try to get at this idea of comprehensive care, including integration of primary care and mental health care and behavioral health care. Okay, so behavioral health integration issues. I'll just kind of go through this quickly. There are a lot of issues that have come up recently with trying to get the clinics, trying to provide behavioral health care in the clinics and trying to get the SAMHSA clinics and the HRSA clinics and just everybody to work together. there's a couple different ways to look at integration is whether you're going to do coordinated care, which tends to be a referral type system, co-located care where it's still two separate agencies but on the same property, and integrated care is where one agency provides all of the services. The health center program requirements that I mentioned earlier can sometimes get in the way of the co-located care and the referral for services care, because one of the expectations of our community health centers is that anybody that they contract with for referrals, that other agency has to meet all the same requirements that the health center has to meet. And a lot of those requirements are pretty onerous as far as having to serve everybody who comes through their door, even if you can't get reimbursed for the services that you provide. Now, our health centers do receive a grant to offset that, but the agencies that they're going to be referring or contracting with aren't necessarily receiving some of that grant money to do that. Okay. Medicaid same-day billing is a really big issue in the states, where there are 14 states across the country that do not allow Medicaid same-day billing. So that makes it very difficult to do comprehensive care. Oftentimes the health centers will draw in a patient because they're coming in to get the primary care, and then while they're there, they try to then get them into some behavioral health care services as appropriate. But if it's the same day, they can't then bill for those behavioral health care services. And so there are 14 states where they just flat out say no, and then 3 states where they flat out say no for FQHCs, which are our health centers. So what happens is our health centers decide that it's still important to provide these services, and it's kind of results coming back is so they provide the services and they find that they can really only bill for about 1 in 8 of the behavioral health care services that they provide, which is not a great business model, but it's a good comprehensive care model. Facility licensure is a big problem. You know, the behavioral health care clinics are licensed one way, our community health centers are licensed a different way. HIPAA versus CFR 42, I think everybody's heard about that one. That one gets hit on a lot. Okay, so these are my slides. Again, we online some key web links, which people might want to take advantage of. Okay.
Thank you.
And then this is me.
Thank you.
All right, thanks.